Hello and welcome to episode 106 of The Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. And Merry Christmas! I'm Derek.
I'm Craig.
And this is Ben.
This week, we're going to be talking about why do we share streaming service passwords? We're going to get into cryptocurrency related to hate speech, and also the question of how do you keep your Christmas gifts secret from your significant other? So without further ado, let's get started.
Well, guys, there is a new podcast from The Verge called Why Do You Push That Button? Which I think I've talked about once or twice before.
Yeah, I think we've done a topic from it before.
Okay. They just had an episode on streaming service passwords and why you do or why you don't share those passwords with other people. And so the idea is I pay for Netflix and Derek doesn't want to pay for Netflix, so I share my password with Derek so that he can use my Netflix account and we only pay for one Netflix account. And that's not a real life scenario, but hypothetically that's how that would go. So I just want to lead off with, I want to address this situation from a biblical worldview, and I want to lead off with the reasons they gave for sharing your streaming service password, whether it's Netflix or Hulu or Amazon Video or HBO Go or any of those things. So reasons to share. Reason number one, and these are like real life people who share their passwords and why they share them. Reason number one, everyone does it. Reason number two,
yep.
I receive someone else's password. I don't share my own. Reason number three, I don't want people using cable. Reason number four, it's awkward that I don't know what's going on with the latest hip show. Reason number five, you should always get perks from friendships. And the last one, Netflix CEO Reed Hastings has said on the internet that he doesn't care that people share streaming service passwords. So what's wrong with it?
Okay, so I mean, it's stealing, but it's also sharing. So someone will probably argue that it's not a bad thing. But essentially, like, okay, you're receiving a service that you're not paying for. And that normally would sound like a nice thing. Like I bought Ben a hamburger, or I bought Derek a donut or something. And he didn't pay for it, but he still got to enjoy it. So that sounds good, except that in that scenario, whoever made or sold the hamburger or the donut is still receiving the money both times for the item that costs money.
And there's only one hamburger. That's the biggest difference.
What? No, they're two different items, though.
No, but when you deal with a physical good, the hamburger's consumed and it's gone. It's not an unlimited supply of whatever content I want.
Yes. Okay. So it's not a perfect analogy, all right? Just bear with me.
No, I'm saying that's why it's okay in the case of buying a hamburger for someone else.
True. So, yeah, that's right. The difference with this is it's a continuous thing and they're getting continuous access. So, if you have someone around and you watch a Netflix show together, then that would be like consuming a hamburger and then it's gone because they're just there temporarily and then they don't have access to it anymore. But sharing your password is like continually stealing hamburgers for the other person.
There's also a lot of headaches to sharing your password with someone. If you use the same password for everything, then they know the password to your bank account. That's pretty stupid. Also,
you shouldn't do that.
What if you share it with a boyfriend or girlfriend who you break up with? That's a horrible idea. It just leads to all kinds of unwise situations that you don't have to deal with if you don't share your password. Okay, and I think maybe on the food analogy, a more one-for-one scenario would be like this. What if my wife and I go to a McDonald's, which we often do, and we get a dollar large cup to get soda in? And if I'm sitting in the restaurant, I get the dollar cup. I get one. My wife doesn't. I can refill it as many times as I want. I have unlimited refills for the $1. That's a McDonald's policy. There's nothing wrong with me getting as many Dr. Peppers as I want from that one cup. But if I share it with my wife, who did not purchase a soft drink, is it stealing? Because, I mean, we would have bought two soft drinks, but we cleverly wanted to save a dollar, so we only bought one and we just share from the same cup. That's the same thing I think as sharing a Netflix password.
I've had someone offer to do that before, and I'm pretty sure I declined. And partly It wasn't my wife, and so there was germs involved. But also, if I'm remembering correctly, I think I did feel bad about it because I knew that I should be paying for my own cup if I'm going to go back for a refill.
Do you guys hear that? That's the devil's advocacy alarm. Oh my goodness, the devil's advocacy alarm.
You just really wanted to add in a new sound effect, didn't you?
No, that's right. That's a take from Sound of Sanity over at Warhorn Media does. It's really funny.
The devil doesn't need any help, Derek, okay?
Well, just to play the devil's advocate here.
The devil needs a lot of help. He needs salvation. But
yeah, so these companies, these are huge companies. They're making tons of money. You know, if we're sharing like our Xfinity password from Comcast, Comcast is a definitively evil company, right? So, you know, we're paying way more money than we should be to get these things. Why can't we spread the love around?
Irrelevant. You know, irrelevant.
Okay, similar scenario. If I steal $100 from you, Derek, is it wrong?
Say that again.
Similar scenario. If I steal $100 from you, Derek, is it wrong?
Yes.
Should I not do it because it's sinful?
Yes. Yes, you shouldn't do it because it's sinful.
All right. Now, does it change the fact that it's wrong and sinful if I steal $100 from Warren Buffett, who has considerably more money than you and me and Craig combined?
Yes, it's still just as sinful. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, so it doesn't change. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I was playing devil's advocate there. The reality is that this is still stealing. It's
unless you're a communist, and then I guess it's maybe okay because, you know, take from the rich and give to the poor.
We live in a capitalist society over here in the United States.
There are no socialists allowed here.
No. So, yeah. I agree.
So let me muddy the waters a little bit. They do cover in the episode a couple of totally fine sharing scenarios. So like in the policies of these companies, you know, like I'm thinking of Amazon Prime, for example. You can share Amazon Prime, the two-day shipping thing. You can share that with someone who lives at your same address. So like my wife and I share Prime. Mm-hmm. We pay for one membership because we're in the same household. And Amazon has a system built for this called Amazon Household. They intentionally want you to do this. Netflix does the same thing. You can share Netflix on a family account across multiple screens. There's nothing wrong with that. They want
iTunes
you to do that.
Home sharing?
Yeah, iTunes home sharing is another example. All right, what about this? What if I share if I pay for a higher plan so that I can get more screens and share that with someone, and they pay for part of it, and I pay for part of it. Is that different than the original scenario that we covered?
Yes.
Why?
Because both parties who are receiving the service are still paying for it. So it's not like there's money being lost by the vendor.
You're saying it's not theft.
Well, I don't think it's theft because there may be a situation in which the person who is giving money to the other person who's getting the higher plan than they would otherwise get is actually unable to access the service themselves through no fault of their own. I'm not talking about financially unable to access it, but is technically unable to access it, like from an infrastructure perspective, if you know what I mean. So yeah. I happen to know that in certain parts of Australia, there are limits on the number of, or there were at least until the NBN got rolled out recently, there were limits on the number of nodes available at the local exchanges for ISPs. And so it was feasible that certain houses on the street could actually get an internet connection and others wouldn't. And so in that case, if the person next door or across the road or something was just actually physically unable to access the internet, I don't know that I'd consider it stealing for someone else to be able to pitch in money and then amplify the signal across the road or something like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand.
Would you say that's stealing or would you say that's not stealing?
That is a good question. It's an even more murky scenario than the one that I proposed. And so you're saying the person who doesn't have physical access to the internet pays someone who does to amplify their signal, and they cover the cost.
Yeah,
or
it doesn't have to be the internet. I guess it works better with the internet than other services because it's, you know, if you have the internet, then you automatically have access to things like Netflix and whatever. So yeah,
you know,
internet.
It's interesting. I think in that scenario, I might actually try to find out from the company how they feel about that. So, like, a lot of companies have terms of service on stuff like this anyway that no one ever reads, where you can find out if the company considers this you stealing from them. So, I think on the more screens scenario, if I'm covering the cost of the additional screens on top of the original service that someone's paying for, I don't think that's theft. This one is a little bit more unclear to the point that I would want to check some terms of service or maybe engage a company via phone or something like that just to even check it out a little bit more. Initially, I don't think I see a problem with it, but I'd have to do some more thinking and investigating on this one personally. And I think this also is another, we say this a lot, but I think this is another conscience area to some extent when things get so murky that there's not a clear biblical thou shalt not or thou shall. We have to allow for weaker and stronger consciences to some extent. So I will willingly admit that my conscience is a weaker one, and therefore I would want to call the company or engage in some sort of terms of service investigation to figure out if this is something I could do in good conscience. But I think that's a consideration that we all have to manage at some level or another. I do just want to conclude this little segment on with a thought, and that is we don't have to know everything that's going on in the hot new show. And we definitely don't want to steal in order to do that. And so if just because everyone else in the world is doing it, I think that even makes this argument stronger. This may be a way for us to preserve a distinctive Christian witness in our society, that we are not among the group of people who do this, that we don't just have access to Netflix just because we're borrowing it from somebody else. There may be an opportunity to have a gospel conversation around that when someone, a coworker, a family member, or a friend thinks it's just so weird that you're not willing to do that. And I mean, if I were wanting to honor Jesus, I wouldn't steal either. So maybe that could help it facilitate some conversation for somebody.
Our sponsor this week is Missionalware, your Reformed theology gift shop. Now, I know it is now Christmas, so really it's way too late to buy Christmas gifts. However, there were probably some things on your list that you did not get that you put on there from Missionalware. So, you know, it's going to be a whole year until Christmas comes again. You should just go get those now. They've got bow ties, they've got posters, mugs, glasses with all sorts of fancy designs, comfy hoodies to last you throughout the winter if you are up here in the Northern Hemisphere. Sorry, all you Australians. They've got t-shirts too. So, you know, you got all kinds of options. Check them out at missionalware.com to get your lifestyle on mission to the glory of God. And thank you, Missionalware, for sponsoring this week's Tech Reformation.
A few weeks back, I brought up a topic about cryptocurrency, which was more focused on, I guess, what does it look like to reward internet users for the way they spend their time, and less on the actual nuts and bolts of cryptocurrency itself. There was some discussion after that in the Slack, which might be helpful for people who are like, crypto what now? If you don't know what that means, or if you're confused by the language of blockchains and all that kind of thing, then maybe jump in there and just scroll back a bit in the episode discussion. But this week, I came across an article about a new group, a new initiative called Ananas. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. A-N-A-N-A-S. And basically, the catch line at the beginning is, can a cryptocurrency push back against the tide of hate speech, fake news, and divisive politics? And this group is going to try. I've got to read the like opening paragraphs because it's just, I read it and I was like, what does that mean? Like there's a lot of words in there, and it seems like they're just pushing buzzwords for the sake of it. It says, effectively, they want to fight radicalization by mapping ideologies, providing a compass to navigate belief systems, and using cryptocurrency to reward contributors. That kind of makes sense. Then we get into the muddy bit. The UK-based Charitable Foundation plans to create a platform which works by creating an infrastructure that allows members of an ideology to piece together the elements that best represent them on top of a hyper-relational graph database created by partners, blah, blah, blah. These will be fed into easy-to-use consumer applications augmented by AI and relevant to a target audience. And I got to the end of that and just went, yeah, but so what are they creating? Like, what does it actually do? Like, and how does it work and what does it look like? So, because, I mean, hyper-relational graph database augmented by AI... fine, but tell me what it's actually for. So then a couple of paragraphs down, they say, practically speaking, the first implementation, I'm sorry for all the reading, but you kind of need to get some background into this story, I think, to really work out what we're talking about. Practically speaking, the first implementation of this will be focused on fighting Islamic extremism and Islamophobia, with other religions, cultures, and even politics mappable on the same platform as the respective communities join. What this means is that users will be paid to annotate an online version of the Quran, dubbed the Living Quran, with digital content and real-life resources. So, the founders say that basically at the moment, existing translations don't have a lot of context, and so they're vulnerable to extremists warping them and saying, no, this is how you should interpret it, and then people just go along with it. So, in this instance, they're saying you'll be able to see as much context as you want on any part or theme of the Quran from any perspective, and then even to talk to other people who are in those community, in the Muslim community, to find out what they believe about it and how they interpret it. So, then this is kind of the most interesting paragraph to me. Said, how will this help tackle extremism? The co-founder says, information without context isn't knowledge. Extremists have so many people marketing for them online. They target vulnerable and isolated individuals. If these people are looking for answers, they need to come to a place where this information is outlined. Things like Charlottesville are happening because people don't have the information or understanding. Information feeds empathy. So, then they've got their own cryptocurrency that they're going to use to pay people for this. But just from the outset, before we get into, I want to dig deeper into that paragraph in a sec. But what do you guys think of this as an idea? So, this, I think the idea is to expand it beyond just the Quran. And I guess there would be a living Bible at some point where people annotate the Bible with a whole bunch of different interpretations. And then people can kind of get on and explore what different people think about different passages and try and build their own sort of, and then sort of say, I fit into this community of faith, or I don't agree with that part of it, or whatever.
It's an interesting idea. I'm pretty sure the Quran is only the Quran in the original Arabic, though, so I don't know how much,
technically speaking,
an illustrated and annotated one would be faithful to the original source. But that aside, I actually disagree with the assertion that Charlottesville is a problem of education.
Correct.
That we just don't have all the right information out there. And if we just get the information out and educate people, then we won't have this problem. It's a sin problem. We have a proclivity or a propensity toward evil in our nature. And it's not just that we don't have all the right information.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that that justifies the fact that it took place. It is evil. But the reason it's evil is not because of a lack of education.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And that's when I said we should dig deeper into that paragraph. That last line is really the bit that stuck out to me, because I think you're right. I would say information might feed empathy, but it doesn't create empathy. Empathy is something that involves obviously caring for someone else, caring about their feelings, and taking the time and the emotional intelligence required to put yourself in their shoes and understand what they're going through. And to me, that seems pretty clear that that's something that should be built into us as people made in the image of God and who are looking to respect and value other people who are also made in the image of God. And so education can help us get to a better understanding, but ultimately I think a lack of empathy extends from a worldview or ideology problem that says that people who are different to you are not equal of value and worth and dignity before God, which I think as Christians we would say all people are made in God's image and therefore we should show empathy because, you know, they're worth showing empathy to, essentially. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
That sort of cryptocurrency side of things and blockchains and sort of tracking usage of things is kind of one side of this story, which I think is still really interesting. And I heard even this morning on TechCrunch, I watched a YouTube video about the value of Bitcoin and how it's just going off at the moment, so that's kind of interesting. But where I really think this story is also heading is, if this is going to happen with the Quran, I'm assuming it's going to happen with other religions and cult texts and all sorts of things. And so, if it was to happen with the Bible, if there was this online thing called the Living Bible, and people were just able to go and sort of annotate it and say, well, this is how I interpret this bit, and then you kind of maybe even build communities around different interpretations of different passages. To me, there's a real fundamental problem with that, which is that we're not allowing the Bible to interpret the Bible, but we're picking bits of it apart and kind of saying, well, this, my interpretation of this section goes like this, and therefore that influences my other. And to me, there's already enough crazy interpretations of things. Like, there's enough Rob Bell and Joel Osteen on the Christian bookshop shelves to confuse people about how to interpret the Bible. I don't know that we need the whole internet of voices piling on as well and coming up and sort of laying out all the weird and wacky interpretations of things too. That and yeah, so
well, I think that not every interpretation is equally valid, and we would do well to remember that. In our postmodern culture, it's just not the case that everyone's opinion is equally thought-provoking or even thought out. Like, some opinions are just dumb, and you're entitled to that opinion. I'm not saying that you shouldn't say that. I'm definitely not a fan of censorship by any stretch of the imagination. But that doesn't mean just because you're able to say it that it's somehow smart. So I think legitimate interpretations should be prized over illegitimate ones. And I think you're right that the scripture interprets the scripture. And when we look at people's interpretations, we want to compare, scriptures and interpretations to each other and look for internal consistency. And I think ultimately the way that we understand scripture is that we look for the author's original meaning and not just what it means to me in my context, which can also be important when we talk about application. We do want to be applying the text to our lives and be being changed by it. But ultimately, the meaning of the text is locked away in the author's mind. And so when we can get to that and understand what he or she originally meant, then we can understand what God means.
So I figured for the last thing to wrap up this week, I would take a little bit of a lighter topic and Christmas themed. And I wanted to ask you guys, how do you keep your Christmas purchases for your spouse? And how does your spouse keep their Christmas purchases for you secret until Christmas Day? Because now we live like back in the day, you could just take some cash from wherever you keep the cash you know, use the credit card or whatever, and they wouldn't know until the end of the month, you know, where you spent that money and on all that stuff. But now we have, you know, mutual Amazons that we order off of, and we have online banking that we can all check, you know, and see. So it creates a problem. So how do you guys do this?
Well, I benefit for sure from being the one who does the finances in the family, because my wife just straight up doesn't check our online banking stuff really ever, I don't think. But so I can just use the debit card and then she'll never know. I mean, maybe she's checking it and not telling me and is spoiling all of her surprises. If you are, Anna, then that's not okay. And we need to talk. But I will say something funny happened recently. A couple weeks ago, I had a birthday and she wanted to surprise me, of course, with my birthday present. So she didn't want we on our credit cards to monitor not only our cash flow, but also identity theft. We have all of our credit card transactions as push notifications on both of our phones. So whenever we spend more than $0 on anything anywhere, we get a push notification, which probably sounds crazy to most people who are listening. But I also use it as a way, back before YNAB had imports, I used that as a way of reconciling so I could know that I'd entered something in because I cleared the notification off my phone. Anyway, sorry. About three other people that are listening are going to understand that. Alex Humphrey, Derek, and maybe one other guy out there that I haven't met yet. Anywho, we still have the push notifications, even with the new YNAB. And so my wife asked for my phone because she said, I'm going to buy your birthday present now, and I want to clear the notification from your phone, and I don't want you to go look at the credit card statement, so that way you're surprised by it. And I thought, well, that was a clever way of hiding it from me. She was just straight up about what she wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. She took my phone and got rid of it.
Yeah. Craig, do you run into this issue?
I don't. This issue is an interesting one for us, I think.
Yeah.
My wife is always like, she doesn't want to. Well, she never knows what to get me. She always says, "She says I don't know what to get you." So she always makes me make a list, and then I make a list, and then she gets me what's on the list. So it's not often that I'm surprised. Sometimes I make a longer list, so I know she won't get everything on the list, so then I'm surprised by which things on the list she gets and which things she doesn't. but I guess I'm a little bit boring in that I don't usually get like a complete surprise. That usually comes from other people in my family who probably also don't know what to get me and then just get me whatever they think they should get me, which I'm still thankful for. It usually turns out well. In terms of buying for my wife, who does obviously enjoy a surprise, well, that's not obvious, but she does enjoy a surprise. Yeah, that's a more difficult one because we do have obviously a combined bank account, and internet banking. We both have access to that. I would say if we want to be sneaky about it and you both have access to internet banking, there is also always the possibility of withdrawing some cash and paying in cash, because you'll see that the cash has gone out, but then, you don't necessarily have to have if I withdrew a not too unreasonable amount of money, say $100 or something in cash, my wife wouldn't necessarily be like, hey, why did you withdraw $100? But I think we've talked about how we as couples deal with money before, and my wife and I don't know if it's just because we've been married for nearly 10 years or we're just, I don't know, relaxed about money, maybe too much, I don't know. But we don't sort of check up on each other all the time about who's spending what. We just kind of know to be sensible and not to outspend what we can afford, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So that kind of thing would probably go unnoticed, and it wouldn't be in terms of, you know, it wouldn't be something that was questioned and then I'd have to lie, or that would be a whole nother ethical conundrum. So.
Derek, how do you do it?
I don't have a good solution either here.
Derek was asking for tips. That's really what this was.
That's pretty much what this was. However, so our current situation is I'm the finance guy because I actually like it. And Tanya doesn't look at any of the online banking stuff. So that's easy. But now we have some automatic import with YNAB. And so I will tell you what my wife did. Me buying things for her, not an issue. She doesn't check these things. She doesn't do the finances. She doesn't have to go through the transactions. But what she did last year when she bought me an Apple Watch was she went through a whole thing of getting cash from other family members. And because it was a large enough amount of money that, like, if I saw that somewhere, like, then I might start getting suspicions. But
oh, you didn't just keep $500 in your wallet? Really?
Yeah, exactly. But so she got some money from other people and went and bought it in cash. And there, we had some cash here too, so she got that. And then we just waited to reconcile everything at the end of the month, which kind of gives me a little bit of a heart attack as someone who likes to keep my finances in check. But
that's pretty clever, though.
It was fine. It was fine. Yeah, it was clever. And she usually actually buys things through my parents. Like if she needs something from Amazon, she'll buy something from my parents so that I don't see it if I'm going through Amazon transactions to just shore everything up. But it's still clunky. So I would love to hear from our listeners what their strategies are for this. Do you open specific bank accounts for like holiday giving, and just like have an allotment of money that's in there that's maybe more than what you need, but enough that, you know, that you can then spend that? I would just be very interested to hear the solutions for this. If you'd like to connect with us, you can hit us up in our Slack workspace. You can get there by going to slack.techreformation.com. and talk about this week's episode or other various topics that interest you.
I want everyone to take a vote on whether sharing streaming service passwords is a sin.
There we go. How would we take that vote, Ben?
Create a poll on Twitter.
In the Slack.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to talk about our other outlet for talking to us, which would be Twitter. We could create a Twitter poll about this, you know.
I don't have a good history with Twitter polls. I'd rather not do that.
Okay. All right, then.
Remember how I'm going to get slapped in the face as a result of a Twitter poll? I'm still angry at the audience for that one.
But there's no stakes to this. However, if you would like to contact us on Twitter, you can go to @TechReformation and tweet at us all of your suggestions or comments.
Suggest that Derek gets slapped in the face. There's an idea.
There we go.
And you can also check out our back catalog at our website, TechReformation.com, or in the podcast feed. Don't forget to rate and recommend this episode.
This has been Tech Reformation. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.